Romans 1:16.
For I am not ashamed.
Not ashamed of the gospel.
For I am not ashamed of the gospel.
The gospel.
I'm not ashamed of the gospel.
For it is the power of God.
Power of God.
For it is the power of God.
For salvation.
To everyone.
For it is the power of God for salvation.
For salvation to everyone who believes.
Believes. For salvation to everyone who believes.
For it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Not Ashamed Show at notashamedshow.us. We are not ashamed to be Americans, not ashamed to be conservatives, and most importantly, not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are broadcasting from the Wing Studio and ready to cover the news, politics, and current events of the day, all from a Christian point of view. Right now, we're doing sort of a special series. We're just kind of doing a free-for-all forum here, as you can tell by my lack of a prepared intro. And I would like to go ahead and introduce my co-host, Chris and Birdie.
Hi.
Yay.
I was thinking about something that I was listening to. There's really a stark contrast in wanting the freedom to do something and believing in some of the decisions that might be made. For instance, I do think that we have a real problem in this country with especially people that claim to be progressives. They will talk about freedom of choice and liberating people, and yet usually when they wind up in the reins of power, what they do is they try to control. And they'll try to regulate out choices that they view are incorrect. So I was thinking about that and thinking of the practical application. While it is definitely true that in Scripture, God encourages correct behavior and morality, it nowhere does he ever endorse a government regulating out immoral behavior. Now, there's a small exception to that with Israel, but the difference is Israel was always intended to be a theocracy. And under the New Testament, we no longer have that system. So one of the, at least the ways that the founders of America saw it, they actually did not want people regulating out particular behaviors for the most part, because they felt that it was the Christian thing to do to allow people to make their own mistakes and then sort it out for themselves. Now, they believed in dealing with the consequences of your own mistakes. For instance, they did not necessarily make adultery illegal, but there were very serious worldly consequences for engaging in behaviors like that. And despite it not being illegal, it was practically unheard of in their time. So I think that there's something to be said for supporting a person's freedom of choice, but not necessarily supporting the particular choices that they might make.
Okay, so just to make sure I'm on the same page.
Uh-huh.
You kind of summed it up. You support people having the freedom to choose to do things?
Well, yeah.
But you don't support...
You may not support the choices that they make. For instance, as long as sort of this goes back to libertarian credo, I think. As long as you are not inflicting some sort of injury upon another person, then I don't see any problem with you taking almost any action, as long as it does not infringe upon the rights of another person's ability to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I think that as long as that happens, it's okay to support a person's freedom to say or do almost anything they want, but making sure that they have to live with the consequences of that. And you sort of look at this contrast between big government and small government. The thing about small government is it does not look at government as being a moral thing. And this goes back to sort of the ideas between justice and mercy, because I believe that the law should absolutely have justice in it. When somebody breaks the law, they're prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and they have to deal with those penalties. But as individuals, we can be merciful. And that's sort of the idea behind small government, is that you have people doing the right thing and making correct decisions because they have the freedom to do so, and the government doesn't try to delve out morality. And I was wondering what y'all thought about that, especially as it relates to Christianity in the New Testament.
One of my first thoughts is, where do you decide what is harmful to someone else and what is not harmful?
That's an important thing to ask.
For example, I would say that we would argue against homosexuality on that basis, right?
Right.
But a lot of people don't see it that way. And so it seems like it would be hard to get a consensus on where is that line.
Right.
And if you're in a government, you have to have some line drawn for it to be a law. So there's a lot of inconsistency, I think, that could arise out of that.
Well, I think that that's where some of the disagreement may spurn from. I may be what most people consider a libertarian, but I'm not a strict libertarian because I don't believe in abortion. But my problem is not, most of the strict libertarians would pose that question to me. Why would you be libertarian and support freedom of choice if you don't support a woman's right to choose? Well, the reason that I don't is because it infringes upon the child's right to life. So as long as an action taken by somebody does not inflict injury upon another person, I'm okay with them making it in general. There might be a handful of exceptions here and there. There's none that I can think of right now, but I think you can kind of square that with the New Testament and allowing people to choose freedom, because you'll notice in the Bible, and I do not think, I'll go ahead and say this, there is no such thing as a godly government in the truest sense, because all governments are going to be corrupt at some level, and it is impossible to create a utopia on earth. And that's what most of the progressives are working towards. They're working towards creating a perfect utopia on earth, and it can't be done because that's against God's will. Not that he would be against a utopia. It's just, it's impossible for a sinful, corrupt world to create such an environment, which is why we have heaven. And so in the same sense, giving people freedom of choice and giving them enough room to succeed or fail on their own, I think is a New Testament ideal as far as government goes. Now, there is no government that doesn't serve evil purposes at some point, even our own. But that's sort of where the argument is springing from, is that you stay out of everybody else's way, you stay away from infringing upon their rights, but as long as you do that, you're free to make your own choices.
Yeah, I've seen people who claim to be Christians say that they support the right or the whatever for people to, for example, with homosexual marriage, that they say that they support their right to do it even though if they don't agree with it. I don't know if you can take that stance, though, biblically speaking. There has to be a line between condoning and allowing. I don't know. Because they would still say that they don't approve of it.
I think that the problem with that, and I'm trying hard not to put words in people's mouths at this point, but I think sort of their logic behind that is that they don't want homosexuality in and of itself to be illegal. So because of that, they say, well, homosexuals ought to be able to get married. Well, that's a different ball of wax, though, because, again, I've said it many times, I don't think that the government should be involved in marriage, period. So my contention with that is they should not be in the business of deciding on a church matter like marriage, since God is the institutioner of marriage. So sort of coming at that from a different angle, I can kind of see why they want the freedom of choice, but not being able to marry another person of your same gender is not really freeing you up for any choices, because, I mean, you can say that you're married to another person of the same gender, but as God is the institutioner of that, you don't get to decide whether you're married or not. God does. So far as I can see it, I can see why they want to, but I think they're misguided in that decision.
I guess maybe my other thought is, we know that the New Testament is not a theocracy.
Right.
It's not set up to be.
It was never intended to be.
It's not intended to be. So, of course, my stance when it has come to being a Christian and dealing with politics or government or whatever is that ultimately the church transcends national boundaries and the church transcends government and physical law. You know, we get that right example throughout the Bible. And so,
because we have a different citizenship.
Right. So we're temporary here anyway.
Right. I am an American citizen, but I am first and foremost a citizen of the kingdom of God, and that supersedes my American citizenship.
Right. So regardless of what the government says is legal or not, that does not mean anything to me as far as my morality or my religion goes.
Well, that's exactly the reason I think they ought not be in the business of trying to delve out morality. And part of my rationale behind that, and there are several reasons, this is just a good way to summarize it. There was something that Lewis wrote about government and getting involved with morality. You're never going to outlaw immoral conduct because you can make...
They tried.
They did. No matter how hard you try, you will never be able to regulate out moral conduct because the people that want to do good are going to do good anyway, and the people that want to do evil are going to find ways around the system. You're never going to snuff out evil. It just does not happen. You look at Lyndon B. Johnson and his war on poverty. You can't snuff out poverty. We live in a world with limited resources, and some people are going to have more than others. That even happened in communism. What happened with communism is that more people were poor. That's all that it did. There were still elites. There were still people with a lot of money at the top. The difference is
everyone
who had
was
it.
Equally poor.
Well, most of the people were equally
That's
poor.
True. There Almost
was still
everyone.
There was still the ruling class. So you're never going to get rid of poverty in the same way. A government cannot delve out morality because it's not designed to do that. And so I kind of look at it in the stance that government needs to get out of everyone's way and let them discover their own morality.
I think he also brought up an interesting point about the judgment and mercy
right.
idea. Once again, going back to the Old Testament, same thing. The old law could not truly give mercy either. Right?
No.
It couldn't, because the old law...
It's a law.
It's a law. It established what was right and what was wrong. And, you know, we read several places in the Old Testament where all it did was it pointed out sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it declared what was sin and what was not, but it had no capability of allowing for anything outside of that. It was a legal system. There was right and wrong. It was binary, and that was all there was to it.
Well, another thing, too, as good as the law of Moses was, and it was good in a lot of ways, sometimes we kind of relegate it to, oh, the old law was physical and evil, and God was like, oh, mess that up. I have to come up with a new one. No, that's not what happened. And there were some merciful things sort of worked into the law, but
there
the
was.
Law itself could not be merciful.
The Jubilee and all that, there were right. acts of mercy in the law. Don't get me wrong on that.
But the point is, a law is not a living thing, and ergo cannot in and of itself delve out mercy, because it does not feel, it does not think, it doesn't have that ability. Well, and look at, as good as that law was, did that snuff out immorality?
No.
Have you read your Old Testament? Just because it was against the law does not mean people didn't do it. One of the Ten Commandments is... you shall have no graven images and not have any other gods before me. How often did that happen in Israel?
Yeah, and I think...
you will never regulate out immorality.
Yeah, and you know, we read... I wish I could have prepared better and brought like all the verses here. I promise these things that I'm saying are in there. But we read...
Yes, please check us on that.
We read in the New Testament that the problem with the old law was not the law, it was the people.
Right.
The people were not perfect, therefore they could not keep the old law. If you could keep the old law perfectly, you know, then you could be saved. But we're not perfect, therefore no one could do that, so no one could be saved by the law. The law cannot save by itself.
Well, Chris, you know this better than most people. How many times do I rail against communism?
Over your cereal and on through the rest of the day?
Yeah, pretty much. There are a few people that you will find that have more disdain for communism than I do. I mean, it killed 10 million people. It's pretty evil, regardless of how people view it through the lens of history. But in and of itself, the ideas behind communism are actually pretty good. The idea of everyone being equal, everybody sharing things. The problem is, it would only work in a world that was populated with only perfect people. If you had even one bad person in that mix, someone takes advantage of it. And so, if you had a world occupied with just perfect people, the law of communism works perfectly. The problem is, if we had a world full of perfect people, why would we need laws in the first place?
Following that point, then, where mercy comes in, mercy is actually breaking the law, right?
In a sense, yes.
And that's the whole point of why God has been so amazing, is because by God's grace, he has broken his own law by showing us grace, by giving us a chance outside of what we deserve, right?
Yeah, not so much breaking it, but I definitely see what you're saying. Yeah, more of making a concession for.
Yeah, the law cannot give mercy because mercy is something that supersedes the law.
Right.
Like if I'm guilty of something, and the law says that I'm condemned, but if the judge has mercy, he is going outside of the law to
right.
give that mercy.
And it's not the law that gives it to you, it's the judge's discretion.
Exactly. The law can't give it. The law cannot give mercy because the law is not made to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I see what you're saying there, and it does make sense.
Also, one thing you can kind of look at from this viewpoint, looking at the difference in justice and mercy and how the law works and how individual people work, you look at how people have tried to use progressive taxes. The progressive tax being that certain people are taxed more. What they're trying to do is redistribute wealth to people that they feel are more deserving to make things more equal. So you have the social planners and central planners in Washington trying to use numbers and figures in the IRS to take more money from rich people so they can redistribute it to poor people and hopefully make everybody more equal. Well, let's just say you could do that. Let's just say that it were legal to give everybody exactly the same amount of pay, no matter how hard they worked, no matter what their status was before that law went into effect. The problem with that is it is therein impossible to have charity, because if you could eliminate poverty, just thinking maybe you could, even though you can't, if you could eliminate poverty, if you could get rid of it all, then there is no more need for charity. And charity is one of the three major virtues of Christianity. If you are no longer able to have charity because everybody is equal, then at that point you're actually kind of circumventing God's will. You look at it through the tax and distribution. They're taking taxes from rich people to give to poor people. But the thing is, the rich people didn't have any say in it. You holding a person at gunpoint or under threat of jailing in the case of taxes, stealing their money and giving it to another person, that's not charity. In fact, you've robbed them from the ability to give to someone. You've taken away their ability to be charitable. And I'm using charity in the newer sense of the word, for just for the record, not the old sense of the word, which encompasses also the love and the backing behind the charitable action. I'm using it more in the sense that people use it nowadays. But the point is, a government that tries to delve out morality, even the things that it tries to do that it sees as being good, like redistributing wealth, the problem that you run into with that is it robs the people's ability to make that choice. And if you no longer have the choice to engage in charity, then you can't do it anymore, and you have stopped somebody from actually following God's will and being charitable.
This might be kind of pointless and a reiteration of previous thoughts, but I kind of like to think of things in metaphors because that helps me understand. What y'all have been saying kind of gives me images of change, positive change, not meant to be imposed from above like a cage or like strings attached to people, turning them into puppets, but I guess rather to grow up from within individuals as a response to them subjugating their lives to Christ's concepts, kind of like a plant. And the church is often described as like a vine. As Christ being like the vine and us being like the branches.
A lot of ag metaphors in the New Testament.
Ha ha ha. So that's just how I imagined it. And that helps me understand things.
I do think that there's a difference with that. Instead of trying to force people into morality, what it does is it allows people to grow into it and to learn how to be moral on their own. I like the growing metaphor there because it is a process and people don't start out moral. They have to be taught that. They have to understand that through knowing Christ and knowing who he is and his plan for them. And it is by his mercy and his goodness that we ourselves learn to be merciful. So when you think about the place that God and his word and morality have to play in our laws, I do think that despite all of the problems, all of the flaws that it has, that the United States Constitution and capitalism is the closest thing that we have ever had in history. And there might be a better thing that comes along later. I really don't know. But I do think that it's the best thing in human history so far that comes the closest to what God intended for a government to be. Obviously, it'll never get to that perfect point because that is not intended for this world. But it doesn't try to make people moral. It gives them the freedom to worship God as they see fit. And where does God rule in the New Testament?
In our hearts.
Exactly.
Ah, good.
He rules in the hearts of individuals. It's about the individual. The problem with progressivism is it's all about the collective. What's good for the masses? What's good for the collective? What does the collective need? And the problem with the collective is it tends to overlook the rights of the few. And that's why, at least for the longest time in our history, we were a nation of laws and not a nation of men. Because the law is blind and it protects the rights of even the smallest individual, no matter how unpopular his beliefs are. And that's what's important, because it is entirely possible that everybody else in the world is wrong and you're the sole person that's right, and you should not be persecuted because of that. You should not have the law come down on you and be punished. We were talking about earlier, Al Gore came out earlier this week saying that if you don't believe in global warming, you should be punished, like through the legal system. You should have to pay extra taxes and that sort of thing. That is unconscionable to me, that because of a belief, you should be punished by the government. I can't even imagine what that's like. That, I mean, that's straight out of that,
Marx.
That's like 1984 stuff right there.
Brothers watching.
Getting into some George Orwell here.
He's so good.
He is a good writer.
And he loved Big Brother. One of the worst and most horrifying sentences I've ever read.
I know.
Don't we all?
I freaked out when I saw that. I was like, really? The bad guy wins in this book? That's awful.
I screamed in my mind. It was horrifying. Worse than any horror movie I've ever not watched.
Big Government is a horror story, that's for sure. There is no happy ending or punchline to that. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to the Not Ashamed Show on notashamedshow.us.
Hey Chris, did you know that a 14-minute call could save you 14% or more on car insurance by switching to Gecko?
Yeah, Caleb, everyone knows that.
Well, yeah, but did you know that liberal girls are really easy to offend?
Hey there, tree-hugging mama. How'd you like to chain yourself up to me?
Oh, you think I'm pretty. You think that's all girls are, don't you? All we're supposed to do is worry about our looks, find husbands, and have lots of kids like it's the Stone Age. Well, I'm a fiercely independent woman, and I don't need your approval.
So, does that mean you dig me? Gecko. 14 minutes could save you 14% or more on car insurance.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Not Ashamed Show at notashamedshow.us, where we are not ashamed to be Americans, not ashamed to be conservatives, and most importantly, not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You can listen to us at our website, notashamedshow.us, by listening to the podcast on the player or just downloading the episode. You can also get us on the RSS feed on iTunes when we post a new episode every Thursday. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to the show last week. A lot of things came up, a lot of things going on right now, especially with the new job, but I wanted to get back with y'all, and it was in part because I do want to keep the show going, and like I said, we're still looking into that and how that's going to work out. Right now, we're looking at doing a couple of remotes, but I really want to emphasize this. One of the reasons that I have come back on the air is to discuss something that is of the utmost of importance. Christians are having some horrible things done to them right now in the Middle East. It seems to be that there's a new report out every day of things that ISIS and other groups are doing to Christians. A lot of people assumed that they would be going after the Jews first. And don't get me wrong, they are, and I'm not in any way trying to diminish the plight of the Jews in the Middle East. It is incredibly difficult to be a Jewish person in the Middle East. But it's getting just as bad, and in some ways worse for Christians, because they're coming after Christians first. Horrific crimes against humanity that should not be taking place because of these people's religion. Some of the latest reports have said some girls as young as 9 are getting pregnant because they've been raped by 10 or 12 ISIS soldiers at the same time. Some of these girls, 9 years old, there's actually open slave markets where you can purchase women and children, and they are priced based on their age, and they're also priced based on their religion. And I was listening to somebody talking about it, and he's done a lot of research. He's the author of a new book out primarily about Christians and what's going on in ISIS. He has said that he's looked at the records in the slave markets. A 50-year-old woman, for instance, 50-60-year-old woman would probably run for about $50 US if she is a Christian. In the same slave markets, a five-year-old being sold into sex slavery is going to be about 170. These men are despicable, evil human beings that believe if you are a Christian, then you deserve anything you get. If you watched their beheadings, then the guy was speaking perfect English, which absolutely astonished me. If you watch some of the beheadings, one of the ones, ISIS came out, and they said,
that this is a message to the people of the cross. We will either subject you to our laws, meaning taxes, we will convert you, or we will kill you. These people are ready to fight to the death. And what they're doing to people, it should jar us from our apathy. It should make us pay attention, even if it weren't Christians, even if it weren't for their religious beliefs, if it's just people. But especially our Christian brothers and sisters that are having ISIS soldiers go out and fight in battles, and once they have, they come back and they get to have their way with a little girl that might not even be 10 years old yet, and for them and their buddies to go out and rape her, and they believe that, well, it's a Christian, so it doesn't matter. There are no rules pertaining to Christians there, that they're just property. This will become as bad as the Holocaust if we let it continue. It may even be worse, because they have a lot more land to deal with than Germany did. I don't know what the answer is. When these people are crucifying children, putting them in cages and burning them slowly, I don't know how mankind stands up to that kind of evil. And that's because I don't think mankind can. But I know God can. I know that He has. He's done it in the past. And He's always won. But He always uses people to do it. When babies were being slaughtered in Egypt because they were Jews, because to the Egyptians their lives didn't mean anything, it was God that stopped it. But He stopped it by using people that weren't willing to let the Egyptians keep doing stuff like that. He stopped it with Moses and with Aaron and with Joshua and Caleb and Miriam. The Jews were almost wiped off the planet during the time they were being controlled by Persia, Babylon, whichever you want to call it, because a man had a vendetta against the Jewish people. Mankind couldn't have stopped that, but God put His people in the right place. Mordecai and Esther. You know, the interesting thing about that story is that God's not actually mentioned in the book of Esther. Not once. Not directly, at least. It never says that God did this, this, and this. But the divine providence is so obvious that they didn't have to. God has stood up to great evil before, and even though they win some victories along the way, eventually it is God that wins out. But good people had to stand up. Good people had to believe that God was going to be on their side because they were doing the right thing. That doesn't mean they didn't have doubts from time to time. It didn't mean that they always knew exactly what they were doing, but they were willing to stand up. They said, "Here am I, Lord, send me." That's what we have to do. In the Declaration of Independence, one of the closing sentences right there, the signers pledged something. They said, "And with a firm reliance on divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." The only reason this country exists is because 56 men believed firmly in the power of God's divine providence. There's different things here and there. Who knows how history would have turned out? But you cannot deny the fact that they stated that the reason that they believed they were doing the right thing and that they could do the right thing, that they could take on the greatest empire in the world at that time, was because they believed in the protection of divine providence. Some of those men died. Some of them lost their kids. Some of them lost their spouses. Some of them lost their houses. Nearly all of them lost their fortunes. I've spoken to you about that many times, but they did what needed to be done. I can't sit here and say to you that if we fight this enemy, and I'm not exactly sure how we're to do that, but I know we can't sit around and do nothing. We cannot sit around and be idle. If we don't speak out about this, if we turn a blind eye, it's going to come to us. There's an ISIS training camp not far from El Paso. I think it's about 30 miles. You can act like the ISIS problem is something that's happening overseas and it doesn't really affect us, and oh, it's sad that there's Christians dying, but there's not much we can do about it. ISIS is here. They're on our front door, and we can't ignore them any longer. They want to be in America. They want to kill us. There are people right now sitting at their computers in suburban America reading up on tactics of how to bomb churches, how to shoot up a shopping mall, how to kill Christians. This is what we're faced with.
and eventually it will come to us. And we have to be the good people that are willing to stand up and say no. Be Moses. Be Esther. Be John the Baptist. Be like the apostles. Be like Jesus. That when whatever part you have to play in this comes around, you say, Lord, I'm ready. You don't have to know exactly what to do. You don't have to know all the little details. You don't even have to know where you're going to end up. Just be available for God to use you when he needs you to. You know, it's funny. The two people that I mentioned earlier, Moses and Esther, both of them were convinced that that was not their role when it started. Moses told God in the burning bush, oh, you've got the wrong guy. I'm not the one. And when God pressed him, he said, no, Lord, I won't do it. And then God straightened him out. Esther was convinced that it was going to be impossible for her to do anything to help her people. And her cousin Mordecai said, this is the reason that you were put in the palace. This may be the reason that you were chosen to be queen. God had his people in place. And believe me, God has his people in place now. And don't think that it's somebody else. You're here, living in this time, for a reason. All of us have a role to play. And I'm not sure why or how, but God has each and every one of us in place because we have a part in his greater plan. So just be ready, because at some point you're going to be called on to do something, and you better be ready to answer. That is our show for this evening. If you have any questions or comments, remember that you can email us at notashameshow@gmail.com. If you would like to ask us any Bible questions, you can also email those to us at the same address, notashameshow@gmail.com. Also, you can like our Facebook page, Not Ashamed Show, for updates and events. Follow us on Twitter, at Not Ashamed Show. If you would like to comment on this episode on Twitter, just tweet hashtag freedom and choice. That's hashtag freedom and choice. We're always happy to get feedback from our listeners, positive or negative. We will be back on the air, as always, this upcoming Thursday, both on our website, notashamedshow.us, and the RSS feed on iTunes. Stay the course, friends.